This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Nearly 250,000 people have died globally from COVID-19, and there are more than 3.5 million confirmed cases. The United States has nearly 70,000 deaths with more than 1.1 million confirmed cases. U.S. President Donald Trump says a vaccine for COVID-19 will be available by the end of the year. He also says the U.S. government is putting its full power and might behind remdesivir, a drug that has shown early promise as a treatment for the disease caused by the new coronavirus. Faced with 20,000 coronavirus deaths, the nation's nursing homes are pushing to get states to grant them emergency protection from lawsuits alleging inadequate care. At least 15 states have enacted measures providing nursing homes some protection from lawsuits arising from the crisis. Now the industry is forging ahead with the campaign to get other states on board. Their argument is that nursing homes should not be liable for events beyond their control, like shortages of protective equipment and testing. Watchdogs and patient advocates argue that lawsuits are the only safety net to keep facilities accountable. New York is banding together with six nearby states to purchase equipment and supplies that sometimes have been hard to come by during the coronavirus pandemic. The governor, Andrew Cuomo, announced Sunday that the consortium will create a regional supply chain for masks, gowns, ventilators, testing supplies, and other equipment vital to fighting the disease. The other states involved include Delaware, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Meanwhile, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is praising residents for mostly adhering to coronavirus social distancing rules during the warmest weekend of the spring, with police handing out only a few dozen summonses. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Sunday that there was enormous evidence that the coronavirus pandemic originated in a laboratory in Wuhan, China. But while highly critical of China's handling of the matter, Pompeo declined to say whether he thought the virus had been intentionally released. He was speaking on the ABC News program this week. U.S. President Donald Trump has been increasingly critical of China's role in the pandemic, insisting that Beijing recklessly concealed important information about the outbreak and demanded that Beijing be held accountable. The Chinese have said the virus originated in a Wuhan market selling exotic animals like bats. Pompeo, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, told ABC News that he agreed with a statement Thursday from the U.S. intelligence community in which it concurred with the wide scientific consensus that the COVID-19 virus was not man-made or genetically modified. The World Health Organization said Sunday that the novel coronavirus originated in nature. Speaking on the BBC's Andrew Marr show, the WHO COVID-19 technical lead Maria Van Kerkhove said that compared to other coronavirus genetic sequences available, COVID-19 is of natural origin coming from bats. As countries across the world seek to get their economies back on track after coronavirus lockdowns are over, bicycles are being seen as a way for some commuters to avoid unsafe crowding on trains and buses. Cycling activists from Germany to Peru are trying to use a moment to get more bike lanes or widen existing ones, even if it's just a temporary measure to make space for commuters on two wheels. The standouts are in Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark, where half of the daily commuters are cyclists, and the Netherlands, with its vast network of bike lanes. But countries elsewhere are catching up at different speeds. The British government had a contingency plan for the death of Prime Minister Boris Johnson after he was admitted to intensive care with COVID-19 last month. That is according to Johnson himself in an interview with the Sun newspaper. The 55-year-old returned to work Monday, a month after testing positive. He was isolated in Downing Street for 10 days before being taken to a hospital. Johnson told the newspaper that he, quote, was going through liters and liters of oxygen for a long time. The prime minister and fiancé, Carrie Simmons, on Saturday announced they named their newborn son Wilfred Laurie Nichols, or Nicholas, partly in tribute to two intensive care doctors called Nicholas, who they say saved Johnson's life. The UK is among the worst hit countries in the world for COVID-19. Deaths, and Johnson is facing criticism from opposition parties who say his government stumbled. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. More and more Kenyans are violating COVID-19 regulations, even as the number of cases continue to rise.
We have observed that some eateries are not only operating without any regard to social distancing requirement, but also deep into curfew hours. The transport sector, particularly matatu and border operators, have also gone back to the old normal ways.
Tanzania reportedly joins a steadily rising number of African countries who want to try an alleged COVID-19 cure from Madagascar. The opposition says Mali's recent parliamentary runoff election was skewed in favor of the ruling party. Ugandan journalist marked Press Freedom Day yesterday, decrying continued attacks. And Cameroon journalists protest against abuse from both the government and separatists.
The separatists think that we have not been doing much to project their independence ideology. And that is why our reporters in the field are targeted.
And the International Organization for Migration says it helped repatriate 11 Ethiopians who escaped from the container of a smuggling truck. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Has recorded 30 new COVID-19 cases after it began massive testing in places considered hotspots, bringing the number of infections to 465. Kenya's Ministry of Health is, however, worried about the rising number of Kenyans who are violating COVID-19 regulations. Marie Ojihambo reports from Nairobi.
The government has embarked on massive testing of Kenyans who have failed to turn up for testing, citing stigmatization and forced quarantine. Speaking in Nairobi, Chief Administrative Secretary, Ministry of Health, Rashid Amani, said that most Kenyans have gone back to normalcy despite government directives to have specific sectors such as hotel and transport industry limit the number of people they accommodate in hotels and those on board.
We have noted with dismay the casual attitude with which some of our people are not observing these measures. We have observed that some eateries are not only operating without any regard to social distancing requirement, but also deep into curfew hours. The transport sector, particularly matatu and border operators, have also gone back to the old normal ways. My appeal, therefore, to hoteliers, transport industry, and everyone else is to abide by the containment measures already highlighted.
The government suspended all public gatherings, including worship areas. The Minister of Health says some Kenyans are holding prayers at night, defying government directives. Mr. Amani said that the massive testing is not bearing fruits, since very few Kenyans are turning up for the tests.
We have also observed that some mosques have revised prayer time and are now opening for prayers at night. I must warn such religious leaders that this contravenes the directive that suspended all religious gatherings.
The health ministry also says most Kenyans are reluctant in visiting health facilities for other health issues for fear of contracting the virus from the hospitals. However, schools in Kenya will remain closed till 4th of June, when the government will give directives. Education Cabinet Secretary George Magoha said that the government is putting in place measures to ensure all children get the same content as they study at home.
If I am empowered once again to make a similar pronouncement, it shall be for all the schools on the issue of online coverage. The public must understand that online coverage is there. It is accessible to all the children and the content that is being given has been cleared by KICD. When the government opens schools, we shall treat all children as equal, and every child will be given content that child did not have.
Since the first COVID-19 case was reported in Kenya mid-March, the country has so far recorded 465 positive cases for the virus, 167 recovered, and 24 lost lives. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Tanzania has reportedly joined a steadily growing number of African countries who want to try an alleged COVID-19 cure from Madagascar. President John Magufuli said over the weekend that he would send a plane to Madagascar to bring back some of the alleged cure. He also on Sunday called for an investigation of Tanzania's national laboratory, claiming the lab has sabotaged the country's coronavirus numbers. This came after the opposition criticized the government for concealing information about the virus. Neville Mina, secretary for the Tanzania Editors Forum, says it is a bit confusing for the president to question his own COVID-19 experts.
It is not surprising that he is complaining on the statistics which has been given out by maybe the Minister of Health and other people who himself appointed them as spokespersons for this particular matter. Because in his last speech, he mentioned categorically that he has the information from his own source, which shows that a good number of people have been tested negative, while the reports from raised by the officials are not telling with what he knows on that particular case. But again, it's a bit confusing because people who are custodian of the information are only three, which was mentioned by his office, actually not his office, but himself.
The opposition in Tanzania had criticized the government, I think, for allegedly hiding information about coronavirus. So do you think perhaps the president might have been responding to this criticism?
Yes, the opposition has criticized the government for not providing the accurate. They have claimed that the government is hiding some information regarding those who have been tested positive. But not only that, they went as far as claiming that some people who have died from the diseases, the number is not as it is mentioned by the authorities. It has said in the parliament by some of the member of parliament from the opposition side, but it has been said outside the parliament.
How true is it that Tanzania may have also ordered an alleged cure of the coronavirus from Madagascar?
Yes, it is true because the president himself has said it, that he's going to send an aircraft to Madagascar to bring that medicine to Tanzania. This sounds a bit positive because in looking even to the reaction, especially in the social media, it has been welcomed by the public in a very positive way. Because as you know, this is a new pandemic and there's no any international vaccine which has been approved even by the WHO, World Health Organization. Here, it has a sort of patriotism inside it because we normally get our medicine, our vaccine from Europe and America and maybe in Asia. And now when the Madagascar claim that they have the medicine for coronavirus, now the debate is why should not us support this innovation from our own continent?
Neville Mina is secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. We're speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Cameroonian journalists celebrated World Press Freedom Day yesterday, Sunday, with protests against abuse from both the government and separatists fighting for an independent English-speaking state. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Journalism is not a crime. Free the press.
This message from the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists that journalism has rules, regulations, and professional ethics is broadcast on television and radio and shared on social media platforms by journalists in Cameroon as a sign of protest against the abuses they face. The message insists that journalists be allowed freedom to practice.
We say no to the constant harassment and haphazard arrests of journalists in their line of duties.
Journalists did not organize popular celebrations and public protests as in the previous years because of the more than 2,000 cases of COVID-19 in Cameroon. They said, however, they shared the pain of peers who have been in detention, such as Mancho Bibixi and T. Conrad, arrested and charged with insurrection against the state of Cameroon, and who have been in detention since 2017. Samuel Wazizi, arrested late last year and jailed for alleged collaboration with separatist fighters, and Wawa Jackson, who was arrested in 2019 and accused of propagating the secessionist agenda in the English-speaking regions where separatists are fighting to break away from the majority French-speaking country. Nga Christian Bibgo, publisher of Cameroon's lone English language daily newspaper, The Garden Post, says his news organ has been the victim of press abuses while covering the separatist crisis that has killed 3,000 people in Cameroon in the past 3 years.
The separatists think that we have not been doing much to project their independence ideology, and that is why our reporters in the field are targeted.
Cameroon's government did not issue a statement on for World Press Freedom Day, as there were no public ceremonies due to COVID-19. However, the government has always maintained that there is press freedom in Cameroon, and journalists are only arrested when they act unprofessionally. Reporters Without Borders says press freedom continues its long decline in Cameroon, and reporters continue to be subjected to threats, attacks, intimidation, and arrests after President Paul Biya's re-election for a seventh term in October 2018. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 4th. Ugandan journalists also marked World Press Freedom Day Sunday, decrying the fact that they continue to work under threats from security organs. They also said poor working conditions continue to negatively impact their reporting. Mugumi David Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
Radio reporter Jonathan Atsingwire says he lives in fear because of working on stories that affect the nation. He says he has often been threatened and detained for reporting on some stories.
Mostly we people who are marching in politics, marching in riots. At the end of the day, some of our gadgets are confiscated. I have a live example of so far over 4 phones of mine, 2 recorders, my textbooks, and 1 computer in the line of my job.
Andrew Irumba, who heads Independent Online Journalists Association in Uganda, says journalists drop stories for fear of their lives. Irumba is also the founder of Spy Uganda, an online publication, says has been summoned by the police for publishing stories critical to some members of the government.
In 2019, I have reported at CID Chivuli 21 times over stories that they used to run over Bank of Uganda fraud. I have reported 21 times, but every time I go, you can spend literally the whole day there seated, just being tortured, no lunch, no nothing. You have nothing to answer, but someone just came and said, I need this person to be tortured this way.
CID stands for Criminal Investigation Department. Moses Bayola is the General Secretary for the Uganda Journalists Association.
We are still pulling ropes in government institutions, most especially the security agencies, especially the police and the LDUs. We don't know whether they understand or they do it intentionally, anything regarding to press human rights.
Fred Enanga, Uganda police spokesperson, says the police is working on improving relations with the journalists.
You find the conflict escalating where both parties fail to understand each other and harmonize the arrangement between them. And this calls for basically politicization on the side of journalists as far as coverage of security-related activities is concerned, and also to get to let members of security also get to know the role of media as far as policing is concerned.
The theme for this year's World Press Freedom Day is journalism without fear or favor in an increasing complex media landscape. Reporters here say they won't give up their work despite the challenges. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rakari in Kampala, Uganda.
A member of the opposition in Mali says the country's April 19 parliamentary runoff election was skewed in favor of the ruling party. Yao Samake lost in the first round but threw his support behind the opposition candidates in the runoff. He says President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita's party took 56 of the 147-seat parliament. Samake also says the Constitutional Court had a hand in skewing the results by assigning representatives instead of those whom the public voted for.
The results were butchered, and it created a public outcry how the Constitutional Court came out with a list of nominations instead of the vote of the people. So a family of Mali would be constituted by members mostly nominated by the Constitutional Court instead of people who benefited from the vote of the people of Mali. That's what we can say in the nutshell.
What can you tell us then about the opposition leader, Soumaila Cisse, who we understand prior to the election was kidnapped? How did his party do?
Soumaila Cisse was kidnapped, but he managed to get elected outright on the first round. So he did not need a second round. He got a landslide victory in his electoral district, even though he was still in the custody of jihadists. He was captured by the jihadists while he was campaigning in the northern Mali. Till now, he has not been found. He's been gone for more than 35 days today.
So what do the kidnappers of Mr. Cisse, what do they want?
So far, we have not heard any communication on ransom or anything that the kidnappers have. Soumaila was kidnapped along with 14 other people who were released a few weeks after they were kidnapped together. They came and gave an account of the tragic event, but we have no knowledge of the whereabouts of Soumaila Cisse at this moment.
As you mentioned, Mali has many problems to deal with. You mentioned the jihadists, the ruling party, President Keita's party. Can they rule effectively with the number of seats that they have now?
Well, James, Mali's parliament is known as the equal chamber of the president that rules at the will of the president. There has never been strong contradiction because the ruling party has always managed to conserve the majority, not just elect them, because at this stage of affairs, the ruling party only has a third, just a little over a third of the MP, so they don't have the majority. But along with other alliance parties, including ADEMA PIG, which has 24 members, along with the ruling party, they already constitute the majority because we have 147, so we don't see any change. But the legitimacy of this parliament and the credibility of the parliament has been really thrown below ground level because of the actions of the Constitutional Court. Today, we do not believe that these people represent the voice of the people. I don't think that these people have the legitimacy to speak on behalf of the people of Mali.
Yasamaki was the first round parliamentary candidate for Mali's largest electoral district of Kati. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bamako. The International Organization for Migration says it has helped repatriate 11 Ethiopians who escaped death after having been locked in the container of a smuggler's truck. They and dozens of other migrants who did not survive were discovered after the truck crossed the Malawi-Mozambique border in March. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Thousands of Ethiopians, desperate to escape poverty at home, make the dangerous trek from the Horn of Africa to Southern Africa each year. Migrants reportedly pay smugglers between $2,500 and $6,000 for the promise of safe travel. However, spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Paul Dillon, says this particular journey turned out to be a nightmarish, harrowing experience.
It was a tragedy that shook the African continent. The remains of 64 migrants from Ethiopia found locked in a container in the back of a truck, discovered on the 24th of March near Tete, Mozambique. A month after escaping death, the young men agreed it is a miracle they survived.
Dillon says the magnitude of their life-threatening experience is only now emerging. He says the young men recount being tortured by the smugglers and deprived of food and water while walking for days through the forest. But the worst experience, they say, was being locked in the truck's container for days. Dillon says the migrants described the horrors of being confined in a space that could barely hold 20 people, where 78 people were piled one on top of another.
After the discovery by Mozambican authorities, officials of the Mozambican National Migration Service brought the survivors to a hospital in Tete, where the young men were treated for hydration, and exhaustion. They would spend a required quarantine period as part of Mozambique's COVID-19 prevention measures.
While in Tete, Dylan says three of the survivors left the facility and have yet to be located. He says the other 11 survivors have been repatriated to Ethiopia, where they will be returned to their home communities in Oromia and Southern Nations, Nationalities, and People's Regional States. He adds the driver of the smuggler's truck has been detained and an investigation is ongoing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Nigeria, where the country's Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Sunday Dare, has ordered payment of funds to Nigerian athletes as palliatives for the coronavirus pandemic. The sum of $150 is being paid into the direct account of each of the athletes from the Central Bank of Nigeria account of the Ministry of Youth and Sports Development. In table tennis news, Africa's top table tennis player, Aruna Quadri, has declared that playing at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, now postponed to 2021, is still a realistic hope. He said his prospects of qualifying for the Olympics is now brighter after his recovery, and also judging by his present ranking. In boxing news, Unified World Heavyweight Champion Anthony Joshua has paid homage to former champions Mike Tyson and Floyd Mayweather Jr. Anthony Joshua, who described the two boxers as the greatest of all time on his verified Instagram page, said the performances of both Mike Tyson and Floyd Mayweather helped inspire him to becoming a world champion. The Nigerian-born Briton said he is inspired by the hard work and dedication that Mayweather puts into his career and by the ruthless way Mike Tyson dispatched his opponents. The manager of Mandela Stadium, the biggest stadium in Uganda, Jamil Sesumwayana, says the lack of sporting events in the last 2 months has made it difficult for his team to meet their financial obligations. Tickets sold on match day is one of the major sources of revenue for the stadium. And with qualifiers for the African Cup of Nations and matches in the Uganda local league suspended, Jamil Sesuyana says salaries of staff and scheduled maintenance of the stadium is now severely affected.
We anticipate that it will hit us hard. We know for the period, for the month of March, April is also now gone. We don't know about May. So yes, it has hit us. That means we won't be earning monies to pay our staff. We won't be earning money to maintain the facility.
Football Kenya Federation President Nick Wanwanwa has announced the end of the 2019-2020 football season in the country following the COVID-19 pandemic. However, the Kenya Premier League Limited, which runs the Kenya Premier League, has opposed the move, citing an existing agreement with the Kenya Football Federation, which mandates it to run the league until September 24, 2020. The FKF president said, going by the Federation's decision, Gor Mahia have been declared champions of the Kenya Premier League, while City Stars are winners of the National Super League.
Each of those leagues had not played 75% of matches. They had, however, played 50% of matches, so we shall go with the standing they had at 50% of matches. So it means, for example, that Gor Mahia are champions of the Premier League. And that is by rules and regulations of FKF.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, May 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckwood, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.